legislation called Delivering for America, which reverses all of DeJoy's actions, you know, not just suspends, but reverses all of his actions, fire the guy, and fully fund the COVID relief, the $25 billion that's needed to for the Postal Service to move forward. The Trump administration has said that they will refuse to, that Trump will veto any rescue money for the Postal Service, and that the ballots won't be able to happen in November as a result. He's walked that back a little bit since, but you know, Trump always walks his stuff back. But that's the story, that's the state of play, and we want folks to participate on Saturday at 11, the big rally at 103rd and Stark.
Check out
SaveThePostOffice.net for an action near you.
All right, and that's going to wrap it up. And thank you very much, Jamie Partridge, for joining me. And I can't say enough about this. You need to know that this is a very, very serious sabotage. This is a serious move towards fascism. All right, you've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM in Cascadia, other frequencies as needed, and going out to you via KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea.
And now it is time for Fight the Empire with your host, Per Fogring. Stay tuned.
Well, good morning. This is Per Fogring. The show is Fight the Empire. You know, the gas that I put in my car the other day comes from oil that's millions of years old. It was built up over millions of years from layers of plankton and plant debris on ancient seabeds. And they're not making it anymore. And the world has used half of it in just about 200 years. And the other half shouldn't be used because it's destroying the climate. But addicted economies can't seem to kick the oil habit. And so we have oil consumption is kind of finally leveling off some after a big post-war World War II increase, but it's not declining very much. You know, the economies of the world are scouring the planet for more oil to keep their economies going. Donald Trump is ready to drill for oil in the Arctic, and you wonder how long will that oil last, and what will the lasting damage be done to the environment? Long after the oil has been gone, the damage remains, and so eventually it's like the economy will be declining, and this decline will be forced upon us. And so the easy oil is gone, and it takes more energy to get the energy. And they have a ratio called EROI, energy return on investment. You know, you put in a certain amount of energy to get the oil out of the ground. If you go back to 1859, the first commercial oil well in Pennsylvania, they struck oil at 69 feet. And in later years after that, you had these big gushers in Oklahoma and Texas where you drill down 100 feet or so, and the pressure of the pressure of the earth on the pools of oil underground would send huge gushers just kind of zooming up into the sky and kind of splashing down all over the place. Well, what's happened is that we keep drilling deeper and deeper to get that oil. You know, we drill miles under the ocean. We have horizontal drilling. And that is where it costs more energy to do all that drilling. And so the net result, the net energy gain, has been shrinking over the years. And, of course, the thing now for getting the oil out is called fracking. And what that does, it's kind of like scraping the bottom of the barrel in a way. You have the last droplets of oil are scattered around in shale. And so fracking takes this poisonous mix of chemicals and sand, and it kind of blasts those droplets out of the shale. And one thing about this fracking, shale oil wells, is that they deplete very rapidly. There's not that much oil there, and so it gets taken out very quickly, and so you have to drill another well, and you have to each succeeding well is further from the from what they call the sweet spot where most of the oil is. And so what you have is this kind of a downward spiral where the frackers are they're sort of poisoning the land, and they're going broke because it costs them more money to get that oil out of the ground, those little droplets blasted out of the shale. And what the thing that has kept them going is that they have new people are investing in shale oil because they feel they're hoping for a bonanza, and so they keep pumping money into it. The more money they pump into it, the less oil gets pumped out. But that is kind of ending right now. There's an article in Bloomberg News that Permian shale cheese signal growth is over, at least for now. America's most prolific shale drillers are accepting a fate once anathema to an industry obsessed with growth, drilling just to ward off production drops. And so they are losing money, and they're halting production. And so meanwhile, there are the economy still needs the oil, but we're not getting it. We're not getting it in the amounts we need. And so there's a kind of frantic efforts to find substitutes, kind of substitutes that will not dwindle away like the fracked oil. And right now, France is building the world's largest nuclear fusion plant. This fusion, the nuclear plants we have now are called fission plants. They get their energy out of splitting atoms. Fusion would get its energy out of putting atoms together. And the thing about fusion, it requires huge temperatures to fuse those atoms together. It requires 150 million degrees centigrade, and this is actually 10 times hotter than the sun's core. And so a fusion plant has been described by somebody, I don't remember who, as, quote, putting the sun in a box. Well, you just can't put the sun in a box. What they do is they have huge magnets are used to sort of contain this super hot plasma in a vacuum chamber, which is called a tokamak. And so you have this dream of unlimited energy, which France is trying to tap into. The thing is that this plant won't even be ready for 5 years. It's a huge expenditure, and it won't be ready for 5 years. And it may not work. People are not really sure that this will work. I don't know. What do you think out there who are listening to this? Do you think that this kind of nuclear energy will work? give us a call at 503-231-8187. One observation is that even if it does work, it produces electric power. And electric power does not fly airplanes, at least not according to technology we have now. That all the air travel depends on not having a liquid fuel. Now, there have been a few cases where people have created kind of ultralight aircraft that have solar panels on the wings, and so they are really kind of energy efficient. They could fly forever, but the thing is only one or two people can ride along on those planes. So it's not commercial. It cannot be scaled up. So if we rely on electric power, that means air travel is gone, which, according to some people, may not be that bad an idea. I don't know. I haven't flown on a plane for many, many years, and it's always been kind of an ordeal. And along with air travel, you have aerial warfare with the severe oil shortages, with the oil running out. I don't know if the world population will agree to having B-52 bombers or whatever use up what fuel is left. Of course, now they have drones, which I'm not sure exactly what drones do. I think some use liquid fuel and some rely on batteries or something. So meanwhile, the world is running out of fuel, and what it means is that nature has given us a kind of a one-time bonanza. Nature put this oil in the ground over the millions of years, and now we have taken it out. This is a one-time, sort of a one-time deal. Nobody's making oil, as I said, and so fusion power is sort of an attempt to break free of these limits. And with the technology that we have today, it's really kind of it's not going to get very far. It's not going anywhere. What's one thing to keep in mind is that there is an endless source of energy 90 million miles away. It's the sun, which is basically a giant fusion reactor. We have it operating. It's been operating now for millions of years at a safe distance. And this is what we have to work with. The big problem is it's not concentrated the way nuclear power is concentrated. It's sort of diffused. It's present, not quite all the time. It's, well, somewhere on the planet, the sun is shining, so there is solar power at a sort of constantly, but it's not. It is not at a commercial level. It can be used for things like it can grow food. You can have solar greenhouses. You can grow food throughout the year, throughout the winter, in a solar greenhouse. It can also heat homes. It can do a lot of things. It just does not lead to a huge, ever-growing economy. It leads to a kind of a more modest economy and a more self-sufficient economy. So this is kind of the energy predicament that we are in right now. I might ask our audience, which do you prefer? What kind of economy would you like to live in? Sort of high, you would like to have this kind of ultra-high-powered dependence on some fuel source, or say a modest economy that is free from free from the these constraints, that has learned to live with a steady, modest supply of energy from the sun.
This we is, do have someone with something to say.
Okay, we have a listener calling. Hello.
Nanette, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning. Good morning, Portland. I'm shipped at sea. I'm calling in support of the sun. Why are we going to put resources into putting a sun in the box when we have a sun in the sky? It's provided for free energy for basically everybody. We just got to, you know, redesign our city grid. If we went street to street and every couple streets had their own windmill and had their own solar set up on their roofs, and you know, there's ways to do it. Set up technology has gotten so great these days with small solar cells have the capacity to really generate a lot of power. We could put it in our highways, you know, the strips down the street.
Mm-hmm.
The nuclear power industry has quite a lot of toxic pollution that they have not cleaned up yet. It seems very detrimental to life on planet Earth to let them continue to pollute. I mean, we have a huge mess on Hanford that has not been addressed.
Oh, I know. That's, you know, there's this radioactive stuff is leaking into the Columbia River. It's the government has spent, I guess, billions of dollars trying to clean this up, but it hasn't happened yet. It's an ongoing job, I guess.
Absolutely. And under this administration, there's been all these deregulation of polluting industries, such as fracking, such as methane, deregulation on gas restrictions. Fracking takes a lot of water. When mm-hmm. we're talking about our state, you know, in serious drought or serious drought across our country, to be wasting water on fracking, especially drinking water.
That's right. Well, it poisons the water, uses up the water up, and it poisons the water. And another curious thing is that it uses a lot of sand, and we're getting into a shortage of sand, which you, it seems kind of unheard of, you know. It seems to be sand and dirt everywhere, but the kind of sand they use for fracking is in, apparently it's running out.
Absolutely. It creates all sorts of havoc. And there's a lot cleaner means or modalities of energy that we can invest in. We just have to be creative. We definitely have the creativity to do it. We just can't let these big industries box us in. We got to think outside the box, like they say. The other mm-hmm. thing that really bugs me about industry is living here in the Pacific Northwest, every time I pay my light bill, I have to invest and PGE or in the Bonneville Power Administration, scapegoating our beautiful, majestic marine mammals and wild salmon under the fictitious guise of protecting cold water fish by them not removing the dams on the lower Snake River.
Mm-hmm.
When we know that these animals need cold water below 68 degrees. People in the Northwest ought not have to invest in such violent policy to promote, you know, private sport industries. We also have our state agencies that are catering like the long arm of the mob, basically, to industries that extract in mass amounts to suit corporate greed over the health of the ecosystem and public health. We wouldn't have 170,000 dead Americans from COVID-19 if human life in our ecosystem was cornerstone in our Constitution and in public health. Right now we have these multinational corporations who pay no allegiance to any flag or any country or any people, who got bailed out in the first 2 weeks of the pandemic, $500 billion, and yet the cops are taking off that beat. So when we want to talk about looting, let's talk about the $500 billion and the five inspector generals that were taking off that beat. How much public money is going to fund the cops rioting in Portland, how much money is going to fund agencies, you know, like BPA and the Army Corps to continue to be negligent, you know, with the public's tax investment. You know, I'm furious that every time I pay my light bill, it goes to pay some kill sea lions. You know, now they're getting paid agents of the dam who want to indiscriminately shoot them under the fictitious guise of cold water fish. I mean, our rivers, from the mouth of the river, 140 nautical miles east, is like a hot tub. You know, our Columbia River used to be tumultuous, raging river of rapids, cold water flowing rapids. Mm-hmm. Now it's a series of lakes. Mm-hmm. And those lakes have cost this region, under the fictitious guise of creating cheap power, yeah, at what cost?
A lot more salmon than at one time than there is now. So we sort of have this choice. Do we want our salmon, or do we want our, I don't know, our kind of high-powered economy?
Exactly. I mean, there's 120 other species that rely on that cold water fish returning to this region.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I shouldn't the decimation of those species every time I pay my light bill.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the Northwest is kind of in a fix because, you know, the electric power rates in Northwest are pretty modest compared to other parts of the country, and it's because of these dams. So we have this sort of cheaper energy, cheaper electric power because of these dams, and that attracts the, you know, the building these, these kind of places that store data, these data farms or whatever they call them, in little towns like Prineville, and they're just like huge, huge warehouses just full of computers that are storing all the data. It accumulates every year, and it's they build them in the Northwest because the it uses a tremendous amount of power to keep these things running, but the power is cheaper here than it would be in other parts of the country. And it just kind of a lot of that data is not it's almost like every little message you send on the internet gets stored someplace. And they, I guess they call it the cloud. And so this cloud can maybe consist of millions of pictures of little kitty cats and things like that. And it uses the power from the Columbia River to keep this thing going. It's a weird setup. Are you still there?
We have Kathy's up next.
Oh, Kathy's on the line. Okay, good morning, Kathy.
Good morning, Pat. Sorry. I'm another 60 generation person. I don't like the term baby boomer, but I back then we were always talking about using less power, riding your bicycle, staying, you know, orienting your life near home and so forth. And now the call is all for solar and wind to replace petroleum fuels, and so there's a problem, though, and this was pointed out in the recent movie that it co-produced with Michael Moore called Planet of the Humans, and this has become pretty controversial, but those of us who've seen it, they are criticizing the solar and wind industry, but they started out by saying, hey, they were environmentalists, they were all for it and everything, and then they noticed some of the problems. One of the problems is that because of intermittent production with both solar and wind, and the difficulty with still battery power, they haven't come up with a good battery to save the power, they have to have a switch over to fossil fuels. And so as solar and wind production goes up, fossil fuel use is also going up as well. because it's, you know, because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so this is pointed out by the film, which is a very legitimate criticism that needs to be heard and discussed by the public. All they're doing is bringing it up. The only answer that they're really offering is to go back to reducing consumption. That's what we've got right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think alternative energy is something we have to do. There's no other option because the energy we use now is running out. So
yes.
The thing is, it cannot give us the kind of high-powered economy that we enjoy right now. It'll give us an economy, a sustainable economy, but it'll be on a kind of a lower level, which may be a good thing. Maybe we'll just sort of learn to get along on a little bit less. It might be more relaxing and less pressure. Who knows? But anyway, that seems to be what's happening.
Well, yeah, the idea that it's a lower level or a sacrifice is also something that they're challenging. Hey, you know, all these people that are getting their exercise at the gym, you know, are you really saying that if you focused on improving your neighborhood so that it was really fun to walk around in, you know, with increasing even wild plants or planting gardens in your front yard, are you really saying that that's a less quality of a life? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that's exactly where we were headed during the 60s. You know, if you just go back and look at, you know, what they were proposing back then. And, you know, solar has become more efficient since even some of the things in the film. But one of the other things that they're also bringing up that needs to be talked about is that what is considered alternative energy and being given funding by those that fund it is, excuse me, biofuel plants, which are being fueled by lumber, by the cutting down of forests, not so much here in Oregon, but more on the East Coast. And they talked about how even the Sierra Club had been funding these biofuel plants, which are actually, don't get me wrong, I probably have some of these facts wrong, and I love the Sierra Club in many ways. This is not an attack on them. But they may not be noticing what all is going on with some of their funding. I don't really know, but it was brought up in the film. And so these biofuel plants, you know, this sounds like a great thing. We're burning garbage or we're going to be burning slash. No, they're actually cutting forests in order to fuel these things. So that is the alternative energy funding. It's, you know, labeled and we think it's going to go into development of solar and wind, has actually been going to these biofuel plants. So that's something to look for. Another thing is, I was this over this last winter, I go south for the winter sometimes, and I've spent a lot of it in Humboldt County, and there was a wind generation plant that was being proposed there. Initially, environmentalists were behind it, but then when they looked into the details, it turns out where it was being proposed was on some of the most pristine hillsides in the county, up above Scotia, if you are familiar with the area.
Mm-hmm.
And it was something like about 40 different towers that they were planning to build. And each tower would have a footprint of cement, which was about 3 acres.
All right, yes.
Mm-hmm. Or not square, but 3 acres. Yeah, and so it was then so much protest was brought up by the community for you know, the impact on the environment in that area that they removed the proposal.
I've always wondered why these windmills had to be so huge. You know, I guess the wind stream is higher up or something. But can't we get along on maybe a lot of smaller windmills that don't kind of mess up the environment that much?
Well, yeah. There's a whole contrast, and if you're actually using home production, you can have a small windmill that works in your home. You can put solar power, you know, on your roof. You can use even very small water generators. And so, you know, if you indeed have the sort of home that you can do all that, you know, of course, a lot of people live in apartments or, you know, cities and so forth. So, you know, but really, we've got to really go back to the drawing board. I think there should be other ways of producing energy besides solar and wind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, over the years, I've heard a lot of ideas for producing energy, and they don't go anywhere, but, you know, it's out there. I mean, there must be lots of ideas. But what's happening also now, another aspect that I've discovered is that solar and wind are now being promoted by many oil companies.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, and they want to invest in it because it actually, as I said originally, because of intermittent, you know, production, oil can go up just at the same time as solar and wind is going up. In fact,
I think we're getting near the end of the show, so.
Okay. But that's about all I had to say. Look mm-hmm. for the Planet of the Humans is the name of the film.
Well, thank you for bringing that up.
Look for his responses to the controversy, because he has backtalk with to the criticisms of the film.
Right, I know that. Well, I think I sort of died down now. Thanks very much for your call.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, this has been Fight the Empire. We've been talking about energy and the kind of economy of the future, and so. I want to thank everybody for listening, and stay tuned to KBOO. It's your station. We are here for you. Hope you will be here for us. Thank you very much.
You are tuned into listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.